Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Monday. Cofield and Company. Adam Hill is here as the company. You heard it, Battleborne Broadcast Center. We'll head to the NBA Finals. Yes, still going on. Stanley Cup, still going on. Survival this weekend. We'll see if Dallas can make it a series after staying alive. That's coming up at 5:30. We'll head off to the NBA Finals game number 5. I know Adam Hill had a busy weekend, so we'll get into all that he covered this weekend. Believe it or not, and we'll expand on the story a little later on, if the finals end tonight, you may see reports of deals in free agency shortly after, because BBW, Big Brian Windhorst, doing a bang-up job the last week or so, bringing hot takes, coming strong at Luka, but also mentioning a note this morning that teams can talk to their own free agents. So you could have some leaks of deals being done. That's why you're seeing, like I just saw a report walking in here, that the Pelicans are unwilling to pay Brandon Ingram $52 million a year on a long extension. So we'll see what comes up in just a little bit. All right, what's going on?
As you said, busy weekend. I mean, a lot of people think it's, you know, starting to kind of be the off season. We're, you know,
never
winding down a little bit and
never
NBA. And we thought we might have the off season already started, the NBA and the NHL. That's not the case. They're still going on. But ton of sporting events around town and a lot to do. So it was a fun weekend.
You ever get an impression of someone off of what someone said about them and you can never shake it?
I know you have some with like people that have said this is a slow time of year, or how do you, what do you do to fill the time in the summer?
Right. That drives me nuts. This isn't even a specific report, but I can never shake it. Like, it wasn't specified or backed up. There was a story a few years ago. I don't know why I go down these paths, but I just can't get out of my head. There was a report a few years ago based on a porn star supposedly dating some of the Warriors.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then people were trying to guess who she had dated or maybe that she had gotten intimate with.
And I think a lot of people figured it out. And then I know that, you know, you used an adjective today and discussing one of the players, and it's been like 5-6 years and you're still using the same adjective.
I can't get rid of it. I can't get rid of it. She said the player was musty. And you know, I'm a big smell guy. So once I hear someone's musty, I can't get out of my head. And it was Klay Thompson. It might not have been.
We think it was.
It could have been Dr. Dre.
There's a lot of signs pointing to the Klay.
So I don't know if people saw it this weekend, but there was a news cycle about Klay unfollowing. Did he unfollow the Warriors? And then did he delete an IG picture of him holding one of the championships with Steph Curry? Did he start messing with his social media?
Yeah, he's unfollowing the Warriors, which is, that's the new era. That's the new way to show your displeasure.
Is it the new era?
I think it is. So your way to show displeasure.
And how old are you?
It's going to change this week. So I keep forgetting. I'm 44.
Okay. Are you in my age group or Klay Thompson's age group?
Klay Thompson.
He's 35.
Yeah.
I like how quickly you're like, your age group. It's actually it's the same gap in age.
It is. But I've always judged it more on like music and what you pay attention to and what you follow and all those sorts of things. I actually wrote about this in my column yesterday. I kind of wrote something about, I was like, look, I tend to skew younger in like music and pop culture. But I feel like I'm old in terms of, I think the stuff that goes on at games.
Yeah.
Like music throughout the whole game, like that sort of thing. Like, go watch the game. Like, I'm old in that regard. But I think music, pop culture, stuff like that.
You are old in that regard. I was thinking of you, I think it was maybe two Fridays ago now, when I had never noticed it before at Aces games, that they play music the entire time, a la what the Spurs did for a while when their team was really bad. And they're like, we got to liven it up.
Yeah.
It doesn't drive me nuts. I guess you get used to it, but there is part of you like, I just want to watch the basketball, turn off the music, especially on the offensive end.
Part of what I said too is I was like, if you're going to play different music the whole time, like, I mean, I base a lot of my choices in like what bars I like to go to based on what music they're playing. Like, if it's good music, I'll sit there and listen the whole time. That's fine. When you play the same music over and over again, it's the same TikTok sound effect the entire game. That's ridiculous.
Which one is that? The Aces do that. I can't even do it with the
I know, the stupid hit. Yes. It's horrific.
Well, I like their promos, but they play them a lot. So you see them a lot.
Over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
But it is better than some people. You wanted to go into a McAfee show there. They do a better overall job than some other teams in the market, though, in terms of entertaining and making sure there's noise and there's a cacophony of something going on.
Guess what? There's a game going on.
I mean, isn't that reality, though?
No, it's not.
In a lot of the cases, people aren't necessarily there for the game.
People think it is.
Look at him! Look at him! Look at Grandpa! Look at him! Oh, you're skewed!
There's one.
I'm younger than you.
There's one that's even that drives me nuts, and I did write it, so I guess I could say it on the air. It's not secret, but every time the other team goes to the free throw line, they have the.
I love the two slice. I think it's one of the great promotions.
It's fine. You don't have to say it every time. If you,
no, you do.
Wait till after.
You're allowed the roar after the first miss.
Right.
It is deafening in there. You're trying to get her to miss.
So wait till
time.
After the first miss and then do it.
Get a slice if someone misses.
Miss one slice. Of the, right. Get a slice.
I almost every said one. Time. I almost didn't get the. Yeah. Well, why don't you just go up and talk to Chet?
It's. I think he's
the
has
PA
to.
Guy.
No, I think he has to though.
Right. It's a sponsor thing.
Right. They need to fix that.
And it is a great promotion. The place goes batty.
Especially because, like, at the end of the game when they're fouling on purpose, it's like every 3 seconds, Mitch White.
Stop. It's not for you.
I'm there for the game.
It's not for you.
The game's for me.
You got in free. People who pay, they want a slice.
But what I wrote about was, hey, most of them, they are way too much. Stop it. It's all the time. You got to knock it off. The baby races, though, keep that.
I'm going to sound clueless. You wrote about this when?
Sunday column.
It was your Sunday column?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to read that.
Part of it.
I have a little trouble with access.
The baby races are awesome, and they should do those more.
I've been at some baby races where I thought it was a little weird.
No, it's great.
Other Mountain West cities, I thought it was a little weird.
One of the dads absolutely cheated. I wanted to run out on the court and grab him and throw him to the ground.
Really?
He just kept running out and grabbing his kid and pointing in the right direction. Like, that's not how it's played, sir.
Why? Who's in charge of this?
That's what I wanted to know. I actually started. I was like, who's the rules expert?
Is it DJ Joe?
Is there a referee for this? You're not allowed to run on the thing and turn the kid in the right direction.
That's ridiculous.
Half the fun is just having kids sit there and just sit on the ground and look around.
I mean, you would liken it to the dog contest, right?
Yeah.
When the dogs have to run a track. I mean, imagine if the owner came up and was like kicking it over a certain direction. Like, oh, you missed it. Yeah. You got to go back. Like the dog does. It does what it wants. If the dog's not disciplined, if your baby doesn't know directions.
Well,
that's on you.
Those dogs are trained, though. The fun of the baby races is the kids do not know that they're in the race. And a lot of them will just sit down and start crying, which is the best part of the whole race.
Do they incentivize at the end of the race? Are they drawing the kids somehow?
Yeah, they usually will have a parent with like a stuffed animal. Like, hey, come on to this side. One parent on each side. So one puts him down on the track, and then the other like, hey, come on over to the side, buddy.
Yeah, so long story short, Klay Thompson in 10 days could be a member of another squad, and I just that the claim that he was a little bit smelly, I can't get out of my head.
He's going to San Antonio.
Okay, all right. We'll get into that in a 5 o'clock hour.
Yeah. Also, because now I start talking about
baby. He's not going to get off it, folks.
You also do
keep going.
You do have to judge who the favorite parent is. You got to put the favorite parent at the end, to like, because you're trying to get the kid to go to the parent.
Oh, okay.
So you have the least favorite parent, put them on the track, and the favorite parent kind of waving them over to come over to my side.
Speaking of being annoyed at a lot of stuff that goes to the game, I don't watch the baby race. You apparently are totally in on it. Are you not sending out tweets and kind of tabulating stats, or what's going on here during that break?
I don't really send that much. I don't send tweets that much anymore. Twitter is so useless now. It's the worst. It's the worst
platform. We just got our Twitter content way up.
It's the worst platform.
Where should we be going now?
I don't know. It's social media is somebody ruined social media. I don't want to say the name.
So Musk ruined it?
The platform is so bad.
What about Facebook?
No.
TikTok?
The algorithm sucks. No. And I dealt with that this weekend because I sent a group text some TikToks, and they're like, oh, I don't give a Chinese government amount. I'm like, all right.
Let's get out of here.
I don't know.
That's been politicized with your wacko friends?
No, not even them.
Different group.
A different group that's it's more like very neutral politically, but they're like, if I click on this, I'm going to have to submit all my information to the government. I don't want to do that. I'm like, all right, I get it. Like, there's no.
So your life is very complicated.
As much as I love social media,
life is very
Twitter was the great. Twitter was a perfect platform, and it's been ruined.
Tonight is it the night before the Celtics? little blip, pulled the plug, lost by 1,000. That's what you do in this era.
Are you asking?
Is tonight the night they win the title?
Are you asking sports follower Adam or employee Adam?
I want to go sports follower. It's okay. You're bit over. That the Mavs are part of your family because
they are. It's over.
Because of Adelson.
Look.
And she owns the Mavs.
The Mavericks are
play nice.
They're a pride-filled organization that is going to fight to the bitter end.
We get that part.
They're going to give it everything they have, and I think that they are the best-run organization in sports, the most family-oriented organization in sports.
Is Luka a more consistent hard worker than you are?
I think everybody
you hesitated.
Everyone under the umbrella, everyone under the corporate umbrella is equally responsible for all dynamics.
I feel like that's not the truth at all. Now you're just taking it too far.
I think that's how it works.
No.
We're one big happy family.
But you say they're not going to win as fan, sports fan Adam, sports observer Adam. Mavs are out.
It's over.
Okay. Tomorrow.
I'll be very sad.
Oilers keep this thing alive?
They have a better chance.
Okay.
I mean, I think Florida is more likely to win the game, but I think Edmonton has a better chance of keeping it alive.
What'd you make of the Panthers sort of pulling from a mindset standpoint what the Celtics did up big, getting blown off the ice?
Hey, we're worried about game five. We're going to go close it out at home.
You know, back in my day, man, teams had pride. They just didn't give up. Sorry, I heard that a lot about the Celtics, so I figured I'd apply it to hockey, which I heard rips.
I think it's smarter.
Yes.
I think it's a smart thing to do.
It is a smart thing to do.
Hey, let's let them give what they're going to give, and we'll wait. We'll try to win it next game when we have a couple more chances.
We'll go back home. All right, so which one are we have a better chance on Wednesday, looking forward to another NBA game or NHL game? Whatever. Late Tuesday night, we'll know.
Yeah.
If we're going to have more games in both of these series. Who has a better shot at stretching out the series?
More likely that the NHL continues.
Why?
Well, because I'm just saying I think Edmonton has a better chance to win than the Mavericks do. But I think that they're both going to end in game five, but like the better chance of winning is for Edmonton because they've got, you know, and you could say Luka might be the best player. We know Connor McDavid is the best player on the ice. He is capable of taking over a game and extending a series and even maybe putting a scare into Florida in this series if he can get things going, you know, even though Florida's a better team. And I think that's where it comes from. As good as Luka is, he can't play.
I'll stop. Let's go to break. You got to reset.
He can't play.
Coming up, we were supposed to have an incredible second half of the month from an MMA standpoint, but we had a bunch of cancellations. We got people bickering now, some UFC talk, and then later in the hour, some boxing. It was a really good boxing weekend. Steve Kim is on tap.
Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
All right, just getting started here on a Monday. Cofield and Company, Battle Born Broadcast Center, you heard it. We've got our great giveaway back. This is awesome. Summer of Fun is back. It runs over the next 6-7 weeks. We give away a trip at the end of each week. All you got to do is text in the code word of the day. We'll tell you a new code word each day. You got to text it in. 364-1100. 702-364-1100. The code word today to get in the running for the big trip is pool. Pool. Body of water. Pool. The trip this week is, 4-day, 3-night trip to Liverpool, home of the Beatles. See the Beatles Museum. Lots of other goodies. 4-day, 3-night trip, courtesy of Lotus Broadcasting and ESPN Las Vegas to Liverpool. How cool is that? Code word, you got to text it in now. 364-1100. Code word is pool. P-O-O-L. Pool. All right, Adam, I was ready. You know, I'm more of a casual MMA guy now than I used to be, you know, when I was on the beat. You still cover it pretty hardcore. And I was really looking forward to Conor McGregor, you know, one of the established superstars of MMA, coming back, big fight, war should be on the feet, and then everything falls apart. And officially, have they announced the injury, or are these just reports that it might be a fracture of the same leg that he broke?
It's not a leg fracture.
It's not a leg fracture.
Okay. Yeah. I got it off the record from his camp what it is, but it's not a leg fracture, but I can't obviously say what it is, but it's to the leg.
Yeah.
Not a break of the leg.
Okay. So I don't know when the first story came out, 10 days ago, right? R.A. Helwani, who we know, reports that, hey, it's in real jeopardy. And then it takes about 4 or 5 days to confirm that the main event is off. No McGregor, no Chandler. Michael Bisping then goes on a weird rant about Ariel Helwani and his reporting. Fire this.
Ariel Helwani's out there. A lot of the time he's posting and tweeting like he's an expert on everything, but he knows nothing. He's putting feelers out there. He likes to break news. If I hear of a situation, I'm not doing investigative journalism, trying to find out, like my life depends on it, and I will risk everything so I can be the one to break it, because who gives a f***? And it's none of your business. Stay out of it, you prick.
It's none of his business. No one cares that Conor McGregor is injured. Are we to wait until UNLV officially confirms everything? Or if you have reliable reports, do you run with it? Here's Ariel Helwani responding, especially that it's none of his business.
The idea that it's none of my business, it's quite literally my business to be reporting and be in the know. That's journalism. And he says, like, I'm not trying to be some investigative journalist. Yeah, I know you're not trying to be some investigative journalist. You're a slap-fighting commentator. You're a bootlicker. You're a former bad boy who became a bootlicker.
Okay. Bootlicker Bisping. Their view of media, Ariel and the former fighter, a little bit different.
It is. Pot kettle? Interesting. There's a lot of intriguing dynamics about this story. These are tough sometimes, because obviously there's things you can and can't say, and Ariel knows that, and Ariel knew more than he said when he was talking about this. But he also was told a lot of things off the record, and he also, this is my belief because I had the same things, was told a lot of the things off the record and told a lot of the things that he was told in order to publicly put it out to pressure Conor to stay in the fight. Like, this is not a critique of Ariel, if people are taking it like that. Like, this is how media is done a lot of the times. And so he knew a lot. I knew a lot. I think a couple other people in the media world knew quite a bit. And there was a balance of, what do you say? What do you put out? What's trustworthy? What's being put out? What's being given to you for purposes other than just journalism? What is, you know, what's negotiating? All those things. Like, all those things are part of it. And so Ariel's doing his job. No question. Bisping is completely wrong in this. And I love Michael Bisping. I think he's a great dude. He's wrong in this case. I know the UFC is probably angry because it wasn't coming from the UFC side, this information. And Bisping is from the UFC side, and he's, you know, an employee in that regard. So there's reasons that he'd probably be upset and attacking Ariel for this, but there's a huge misunderstanding between what the role of the media is and what the UFC believes the role of the media is, for sure. There always has been, and there always will be. And there's also fair critiques of how certain people put information out there. Like, those things are all possible and all true, but in this case, for Michael Bisping to say it's not Ariel's job to do that, that's silly.
Yeah, Ariel then goes on to say that, frankly, Bisping has one goal in mind.
More power to you to be on Dana's good side. So if he could see these clips, he'll be like, good on you, Mike. And so you have chosen to pick a fight with me or to discredit me in order to curry favor with your boss, who gives you a few quid to commentate and be excited about slap fighting. To me, it's shameful. It's embarrassing. And that's why I refer to him as bootlicker Bisping now.
I was really impressed by the a few quid. That really made the connection for me. I don't know what that means. Is that not much money?
Yeah.
Or quid, is that a small denomination? A
small denomination.
Is that right?
Okay. Small amount of money.
Okay.
It is a fascinating dynamic, particularly in this sport more than any other. Because I think as much as the other leagues try to, you know, fight information getting out, like, they actually understand the role of the media, what the media is trying to do and what the media is supposed to do, and they respect like, hey, we understand that you're going to get things. And the UFC obviously has a very, very different opinion of what the media should be and what the media is. And Bisping is an extension of that. And again, I'm not ripping him. I think he's great. His lack of understanding of what the media's role is comes from the company that he works for. There's no question about that. But there is an interest in from the public of what's going on. That look, there are people out there, and I talked about this with some people this weekend in the combat sports world, that, you know, yes, people that bought tickets to the McGregor fight and booked travel and all those things, probably going to be able to get a lot of that back, because you can they have to give you a refund if you want it. I think they're going to try to, you know, say you can apply the cost of those tickets to whatever the new price of the UFC 303 card is, and then take the difference and apply it to whenever McGregor does fight. They're going to try to do some things probably in that regard. To satisfy people. But if they want to get their money back, they can. People that bought it on secondary market, however, can't. And if you had no idea this fight might get canceled for the last 3 weeks,
right,
you may have spent, you know, $10,000, $15,000 on travel and tickets to get here, and then have no recourse to get that back. That sucks.
So at a minimum, reporting on stuff that is mostly accurate before confirmation at least gives consumers a heads up. And
yeah,
I'm not saying that that should be our sole goal in the media, but in this case, it is actually nice. We talk about it all the time. We are a conduit at times for the fans. And in this case, it's nice to give the fans a little bit of a heads up, a 5 or 7 day heads up, like, get ready. This event may be something that you need to get a refund on.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So we were just talking about a reporting beef with ESPN. Check that. A UFC broadcaster, Michael Bisping, and one of the guys who's covered the beef for a long time, just like Adam, R.L. Hawani, and, you know, the news of Conor McGregor coming out, and when you're supposed to report it, what the purpose is. I mean, frankly, as we listen to both of them, it is self-serving for both. Yeah. They both enjoy that part of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so now what? What's going to happen on our event? International Fight Week, UFC 303, we lose McGregor, we lose Chandler fight, and now we've lost what? Another fight, right?
Yeah, the Jamal Hill fight. Now, look, on paper, card got significantly better.
It did?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely it did. But there's just a mysticism about Conor McGregor, right? Like, that's the people want to see Conor. And as much as I think the card is better from a competitive standpoint and from a meaning standpoint, like, there is something different about covering a Conor McGregor fight. There's something different for us in the media about the interest in it, of if people are going to read your stories, if people are going to pay attention. There's something different sitting in the arena, you know, when we get, Alex Pereira against Yuri Prochazka, like, unbelievable fight. Unreal, much better than a Chandler McGregor fight, no question. But there is something different about sitting in the arena when Conor McGregor is walking out. Like, there just is. And so, like, that significantly impacts it. Certainly the economy is impacted greatly, because people aren't flying from Europe and spending a bunch of money and all of those things. And it does change the complexion of the card, even though the card got better. And we've got Brian Ortega on the card now too, which, I mean, that's, he always puts on fun fights. It's incredible. So yeah, the card got better, but it lost some of the mystique and some of that part of it at the top of the card. So, you know, we'll see going forward. I'm excited about the card. I'm excited to see how the fights play out, but it's different when there's no Conor.
I set up what I thought was a fight with lots of mystique. And I'm claiming right side loser.
Okay.
I made a bet last week. Wasn't really a bet, but I threw it out to Danny Smythe, who was in. He's from the morning show. He was in on Cofield and Company. And we knew that the Aviators, Thursday and Friday, were inviting folks from Lotus Broadcasting to come out and throw the first pitch. Thursday was big Greg Salerno, who claims he played baseball in his past. And then Friday was going to be Q Myers. And they went out and threw their respective first pitch. And Greg, a lefty, bounced it to the right of the catcher as you're looking from the mound. It was so bad you could barely see the ball. I don't know where the hell it bounced. I just know it was way off target. Now, Q was looped into the fact that this there was a claim made that he could not outdo the first pitch of Greg Salerno. So I think that went into his mindset. He threw it on target. But I still think, I still stand by what I said. I believe this is a right side loser. I think I nailed it.
I don't even know if it's a loser. Honestly, there was no parameters for what the.
Well, let's just say, you don't have to be involved in this one with parameters.
No, I would. I was going to claim I'm the winner in this, because how many times have I told you guys about how much you need to set standards, and you should have never, ever gotten on the side of the guy who was going first, ever. Then you set a standard for what the second guy has to do.
Yeah, that was a bad bet.
And then Q just goes up there and throws it. I don't know what 10 feet above the batter's head, but you're like, that's a better pitch than the one that bounced.
Yeah.
Right. So
I mean, talk about their delivery.
Oh, Salerno is far superior.
Wait, what?
Salerno was far.
The ball was way off target.
I mean, but you can. We talk about this all the time when you go watch guys shoot, and you can see a guy make three in a row and another guy miss six in a row, and you're like, the guy that missed six in a row is a better shooter. You just tell the form over the long haul. Who's going to be better?
So you're saying Greg Salerno.
I thought his form was better. Yeah.
His form is better.
But I also.
He could be a better pitcher than Q, who hit the glove while the catcher couldn't even get near the ball after Salerno delivered
it. Which one was closer to the. I actually think Salerno's was closer to the strike zone.
It bounced.
Yeah, but he had to jump. The catcher like jumped for the other pitch. And I'll say this. I don't think Q gave it his best effort because he knew all he had to do was get it there. He just had to lob it up there because he knew what Salerno's pitch. He knew the standard he had to get to. This is on you guys for setting bad parameters and for not exactly saying what the standards were. And I think everybody going forward will understand why I put the parameters I do, because you made it too easy for him.
Greg's delivery was absurd.
Neither one.
I mean, he did an old timey big dip to his rear leg, and then tries to come over the top with a three quarter. Like, bro, your head's away from the target as you're winding up. Now you got to focus back.
Yeah.
Plus, you ain't what you were at 18. Your equilibrium, your balance sucks now.
I think that's
you're
the part.
You're a big guy.
That's the part.
Just ready, lefty, and freaking slide forward.
Yeah. He, in his
you're
mind.
You're holding the runner. We don't need a full windup, because that's what Q basically just set and lobbed the ball.
Yeah. In his
what
mind.
What are you doing? This is serious stuff.
In his mind, Salerno like got done playing baseball a year ago.
Yeah.
And he's just like getting back. Like, no, it's been like 30 years, dude. Like, you gotta.
I mean, Sandy Koufax out there plus 200 pounds.
Yeah. It was a ridiculous effort. He was way too ambitious on his part. Should have just thrown the ball. And then obviously set a very, very easy standard for Q to get over. And then Q, like I said, Q might be able to pitch. We don't know. We'll never know, because he didn't have to. All he had to do was stand up there, lob the ball up there, throw it up in the air, throw a pop fly to the catcher, and then he won. And so that was ridiculous.
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
All right, let's bring in Steve Kim here on this Monday. Adam Hill is here. Steve, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, fellas. Good Monday to you.
What are you up to today?
I'm actually right now on the freeway, a bit of a parking lot going off between the 101, 10, 5, and 60 intersection or freeways. We taped the Three Knockdown Rule with Mario Lopez and I a little bit early today, and then I'm headed to the office in East L.A. Montebello.
Nice. We had a discussion after your spot last week, and it centered around when do you make a comment to someone about appearance. And I've seen your hair go, I think, more and more naturally gray over the last four appearances. But then I said after our spot, I was like, I don't know if I want to ask Steve, but clearly you're trying to do it. What is happening here? Because your jet black locks are, they're going bye-bye.
Yeah. I'm no longer Jet Black Lee. And I'm now more or less, I'm the Raiders. I'm silver and black. I just decided to kind of let it go natural. I actually got the buzz cut on Thursday, so when you see me this week, you're going to be like, wow, it's complete. It took a while. It took about 2.5 months. Oh, I went through a lot of ridicule. Mario Lopez and Jason Whitlock actually both gave it the seal of approval today. They actually have been turned on their opinion of the color of my hair.
If I were to guess, I would guess that Whitlock colors his hair a little bit.
He does. He'll admit it.
Yep.
You know, he exactly. actually now he's actually thinking about maybe he should let it go natural. You know, the problem is it became a little bit of a hassle, and if you miss a haircut and you do this, it gets patchy. And I'm like, you know what? Here's the thing about men. We age like wine. Other people may age like milk.
Other people, right.
And yes. So I'm still doing the Bowflex, so I can age like wine, so I'm going to let the hair color go natural. So I'm pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good about this decision.
I feel like Mario is still like 22, so like – how do you even talk to him about this?
Well, no, you know, Mario is forever going to be like Ponce de Leon. He's got the fountain of youth, and, you know, I'm sure he has some help, but he stays in great shape. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mario actually said today that, like, you know what? You're turning my opinion on that. After 2 months of just getting hassled and badgered, he actually says, you know what? I'm coming around on the hair.
I mean, looking back on it, should you just shave the whole thing down like real short, and then maybe it wouldn't have been so shocking.
Yeah, maybe, but then I didn't want to look like a Buddhist monk either, so I'm good with the decision. I was good with the Pepe Le Pew phase. I was okay.
The reason this started, Steve, it was actually more of a conversation about friendship than it was about hair. Like, yeah. We know two people. One of them got some work done on their hair, and it looks a bit ridiculous. I mean, it's getting better.
They got a hair job, so yeah. They have like full head of hair after they're really bald.
And it's getting better. And I talked to his best friend, and his best friend was like, "Oh, we don't mention that. We don't bring that up. We don't talk about it." And I was like, "You haven't talked to him about it?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Then you're not real friends."
Wow.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I get you want to, like, you know, have some fun. You want to rib them, but you don't know how sensitive people are. You know, the point Mario made is that once you go gray or all the way white, you can't go back. And I said, says who? What is it, one of those unwritten rules? I actually like the fact that it seems to be a mixture. I think one more haircut cycle, it's going to be complete. I kind of knew what I was getting into. But, you know, I'm lucky. Look, here's the thing. I think it's different for people that have a full head of hair. I don't think they're going to be nearly as sensitive about the fact that, hey, you had no hair. And you were balding, and you decided to do an operation. See, I think there's degrees here of sensitivity in terms of what you're actually going through. So I get it. If that friend is a little sensitive and it's a sore spot, I wouldn't bring it up either, to be honest with you.
Steve Kim is with us. The spot is brought to you by Snack Nutrition. We move on. I know Adam would do this for 15 minutes, but I can tell you one guy who I don't think is ever going to let his hair go fully gray. He's a beautiful man. He's getting more and more taken care of, and that is Tom Brady. So Brady did a Patriots Hall of Fame speech, and I saw you guys had a strong reaction to it. Let's give a little clip of this to the audience for Steve here. Fire this.
To be successful at anything, the truth is you don't have to be special. You just have to be what most people aren't. Consistent, determined, and willing to work for it. No shortcuts.
Okay. I saw that you and Whitlock had a discussion about how this could be weaponized by enemies of Brady. I didn't see it, but I'd love to hear the explanation.
No, what I said was that there's going to be a sect of America that's going to say, oh, my God, it's easy for him to say he had both parents and that, you know, the, you know, every something like that. They could say, well, that's rooted in white supremacy or a toxic male culture and all that other stuff. You know, the stuff that really built America, the greatest country in the world, greatest empire there ever was, crumbling now, but okay, whatever. And I think Tom Brady, his message was not about football. It was about having old school values and hard work and dedication. But nowadays, when you say stuff like that, it can be the most innocuous statement in regards to situations like this. They will basically turn it around against you, and they will make because that is a characteristic of modern day victimhood. You take old school values and common sense principles, and you find a way to rip them.
Steve Kim is with us. Let's talk Tank Davis and the win over the weekend. That was a vicious finish. As Adam, you sent over what? The guy's incredibly popular.
Yeah.
Give me your read on Tank in this fight and Tank in the future.
Well, this fight never was in doubt with me. There's a reason why they chose him. Even when he lost the first round or three, you know, I said on three knockdown rule, there's a tortoise and a hare type of dynamic that exist with Tank. He will give up some rounds, but over a course of 36 minutes, his opponents are not good enough to win. They are either not going to be strong enough punches, or they're just not going to be evasive enough or have all-around skills. And Frank Martin is a decent fighter. I didn't think he was nearly seasoned enough to pull the upset. But Tank Davis is great television. You will see something that you're going to talk about. He creates a buzz, very hard-hitting. And now I think it's time for him to kind of step up from AAA pitching and get to the big show. I know that there's been some legitimate discussions about him facing an older version of Vasyl Lomachenko. That would certainly be a good start. And I would hope that the politics of the game do not impede a future fight between him and Shakur Stevenson, because I think Shakur is a very tough puzzle to solve stylistically. So, but again, Tank Davis, when he fights, it's a day that's very good for boxing because stuff happens.
Yeah, the popularity is, you know, just jumping in and out of boxing a little bit to help out on some of the coverage, I'm blown away by Tank Davis being among the most popular people I ever write about. The traffic's always wild. The feedback from fans is crazy. When I write about Tank Davis more than other fighters, it seems like the fact that there is a troubled past, not very far in the past either, very recent, like it doesn't seem to matter at all. Like there doesn't seem to be any uncomfortability with him at all.
No, there really isn't. Look, when it comes to all this, I'm not a moralist, and I'm not the ethics police, and neither are his fans or fans in general. We like to see fights. And when it comes to boxing, look, I think we can all appreciate hit and not be hit and the sweet science, but we have to be honest about it. I think a lot of us just have a bloodlust and would like to see people get knocked out. And look, in all forms of entertainment and sports, we conveniently overlook transgressions of our favorite athletes or players that are on the teams or the teams that we support because they're productive and they're fun and they entertain us. And I think there's an argument to be made like, hey, these guys are not raising our kids. They really shouldn't be our role models or our community thought leaders. They're there to do a job. They're there to be productive athletes and entertainers. And from that, if that is your standard, and I think I'm honest enough to say it is my standard, I'm not looking for him to be my role model. Tank Davis checks those boxes.
So not only Tank Davis popular, obviously Ryan Garcia is fairly popular too, and he's always making headlines, and he did so again outside the ring the other night. And I think it hit home with a lot of people maybe in the media because he was taking shots at Caleb Plant and Caleb Plant's wife, who most of us who've been around boxing know. It was uncomfortable and gross for a lot of people, but others said it's just Ryan Garcia being Ryan Garcia, and he's getting more popular from it, and that's what you need to do in boxing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think people that know me, I'm not a fan of Ryan Garcia. I think there's a lot of him that is very disingenuous, almost fraudulent. You know, my view is this, are you a man of God or not? You're the one throwing around religion and your faith in Christ. I don't think that's really Christian-like behavior. Then also, you know, he vacillates between saying, oh, I'm just trolling with my behavior, but then at the same time saying he's a mental health advocate. Well, you know, again, I'm not trying to be the overlord of thought, but my view is this. You can be one or the other. You're either going to be an advocate for mental health or you're just going to act crazy for your own social media clout. So I think there's an inauthenticity to Ryan Garcia, but I will say this, he's also a product of the times, and the genius, and I will say this, the genius of Ryan is that he's smarter than a whole swath of the American public that is just dumb and stupid. And to me, I think he's going to go down as one of the great cult leaders since Jim Jones. Now, I don't know if he's going to serve Kool-Aid out there in Guyana. I certainly hope not. That'd be a bad thing. I'd hate to have to clean up that mess. But he does remind me of a cult leader.
Floyd has that effect on people. And I wonder what's happening right now. We're talking to Steve Kim. What exactly is Floyd doing? I saw some old sparring video and like Devin Haney was messing up Tank Davis. And then Floyd then put out to his followers, hey, watch UFC on Saturday, not the Tank Davis fight. What's happening here?
Well, Floyd is being Floyd. I've never understood this thing that Floyd is a great guy. He's a brilliant boxing talent. he's in many ways he was a marketing genius, but he's also a very flawed individual. And look, him and Tank are not on good terms, and my understanding is that Leonard Ellerbe, who is no longer the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, I'm sure you guys saw that announcement, he's going to be involved with Tank Davis. He's still going to be involved in that career, so Leonard's going to be okay. But Floyd is being petty. He really is. And it just goes to show you the character flaws. If you talk to people in the background, like some of his former bodyguards that I've gotten to know, they will tell you that being with Floyd, it was a chore. It always ends up bad. And it doesn't surprise me. And look, it's not a great look for Floyd. There comes a point in time that you have to be the adult in these situations. And quite frankly, he has not been that.
Is this a setup for somewhere down the road where mentor battles student?
Don't give him any ideas. I mean, what isn't Floyd in his mid-40s at this point? I mean, look, say what you want. Floyd is great. He can beat the Gaddies of the world. And I don't mean Arturo. I'm talking about one of those Gaddies that he's fighting in a rematch from last year. Look. Floyd is a very interesting case because I still suspect that he's not a billionaire. I suspect he doesn't make $300 a month. There's a reason why he's still willing to get hit in the head, even from novices. I would hope it doesn't come down to that. And look, guys, I'm a traditionalist. I think fighters in their prime should fight other fighters in their prime. There's other fights for Tank to make. But I will admit, if you make Tank versus his mentor, there would be a lot of interest, but let's just put it this way. I know this for a fact in talking to people. Tank does not like Floyd. He has a very big distaste for him.
Yeah. Floyd's 47. We got about 30 seconds left here, but Floyd's 47. I mean, at 48 years old, could they replicate sort of to go back in wrestling history, Bruno Sammartino, Larry Zbyszko?
Yeah, you went all the way back there. Remember that? Look, as much as I like wrestling, I know that's scripted, and I'm just telling you, Tank. Tank has a long memory. I think Tank. If you said to Tank, you can hit Floyd as much as you want, as hard as you want. Trust me, he might even fight that one for free.
Damn. All right, Steve, we appreciate it. A Spot Every Week is brought to you by Snack Nutrition. Make sure you check out the latest 3 knockdown rule and be safe in that traffic, Steve. We'll see you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
I love referencing that turn. It's probably about 40 years ago now, but very student,
very dated reference.
Zbyszko, I think, came out and had the chair, and Sammartino just got destroyed.